Nixon Gwilt Law presents Legally FemTech, hosted by Bethany Corbin. Bethany is a healthcare innovation attorney who works with new and innovative health tech companies that are revolutionizing women's healthcare and improving women's lives. In this podcast, Bethany discusses the practical, legal, and ethical aspects of FemTech with the industry's most important voices. This podcast is not intended as legal advice and is not an endorsement of any product or company. Now, here's your host.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Legally FemTech. This week, we have a double feature where we're going to tackle the important topic of inclusive language and design in FemTech products. And we're going to do this with two separate guest speakers. When FemTech founders are creating their products, they're often designing for a specific audience base. However, it's also important to think first about the diverse nature of that audience base and how each subpopulation may not only interact with, but react to the design choices and assumptions that you've made. It's really crucial for FemTech companies to build inclusivity into their products from the start. And my guests today are going to provide some strategies for how to achieve this. So this is part one of the two-part segment. And in this episode, I'm excited to speak with Elizabeth Gordon. Elizabeth is a fractional CMO, marketing strategist, and conversion copywriter who helps FemTech and sex tech businesses change the landscape of reproductive health. You'll often find Elizabeth putting her decade of marketing experience to use, helping SaaS and e-commerce startups grow their customer base and expand their revenue. Elizabeth also created an inclusive language guide for FemTech and sex tech leaders, which we're going to talk about more in this episode. So welcome, Elizabeth. I'm very excited to have you on the show today. So Elizabeth, I want to start first with a pretty basic question, but just to level set the playing field here for the listeners. What is inclusivity? What does that mean? How do you think about that?
Yeah, so inclusivity is the concept that all services, opportunities, and establishments are open to all people, and that stereotypes related to sex don't define societal roles and expectations. So gender inclusive language means that you use words that promote gender equality and give respect to diverse bodies, genders, and relationships in this world.
Wonderful. So how are inclusivity and inclusive language really related to conscious or unconscious bias? What's the link there?
Probably all in a different place with acknowledging or learning about or unlearning our internal bias. But using inclusive language is the conscious removal of words and phrases that continue to promote things like prejudice, stereotypes, and discriminatory views. And the great thing about discussion of inclusive language is that it really opens up closed doors in your own brain, gives you a different perspective to think about, and really paves the way for a better understanding of the different lived experiences of the people around us.
Very nice. So we kind of know this link, right, between inclusivity and bias. But why then are inclusivity and, you know, inclusive language really important topics for FemTech innovators to think about as they're designing their products?
All right, so let's chat about the elephant in the room. We wouldn't have the term FemTech if the health and medical field was inclusive of the female sex and the diseases and conditions and experiences that disproportionately or differently affect that body. So I get the need for FemTech leaders to shine a spotlight on this inequality and the intense need for innovation and technology to address all the challenges that were so long ignored. It's something I'm incredibly passionate about. But what I think is important for this space is that we work as hard as we can not to repeat the same mistakes of the past and further marginalize the LGBTQ plus community. So why is it important? Because using inclusive language helps you talk to a broader audience, creates a bigger impact, and gets your product to every person who will benefit from it. And in terms of your actual business and sales, most recent studies are showing that nearly 80% of the Gen Z population say it's important for brands to address diversity and inclusion, and that they're more likely to purchase from brands that have inclusive marketing. But the larger piece here, that's the fact that the language we use today affects future rhetoric, advocacy, and even legislation. So we're seeing that today with everything going around abortion rights, that past precedent is actually going to play a role or a part in the Supreme Court's decision coming out any day now. So bringing inclusivity into the consciousness of more people and incorporating inclusive language into our daily lives will help us advocate, protect, and serve more people in the future.
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially as you mentioned, right? The landscape of abortion is potentially changing. And so now more than ever, it's really important that we're making sure that we're very decisive and purposeful in the language that we're using so that we don't create more negative outcomes or, you know, just unconsciously create biased products that are excluding or othering certain portions of the population.
Absolutely.
So one question I have, right, is that a lot of company leaders assume that if they're using the right words, so for instance, right, gender neutral pronouns, that they have succeeded in creating an inclusive product or an inclusive work environment. But we know, right, that sex and gender inclusivity are really about much more than simply knowing and using the right words. So what else should a femtech company know or need to do in order to operationalize inclusivity?
Sure. So I've written a guide with my partner, Liv, called the Inclusive Language Guide for Femtech and Sex Tech Leaders. And it's a great starting point for this work, but it is by no means exhaustive. A few of the steps that I think are most critical. First and foremost, making sure you and your team actually understand the difference between gender identity, gender expression, sex, and sexual orientation. One of the biggest missteps I see is people trying to write inclusively, but going so wide with their language that they include people that their product isn't actually for. So, for example, women and gender nonconforming people. The next one would be making diverse hires for your team, but also making sure that you aren't leaning on that person as your source of information or training for others, unless they want that role. Another very important step is to make sure you're creating sexuality and gender diverse customer avatars. So this is a great way to make sure you're taking into account all the ways your product will be used and the different experiences people will have with it. And I promise you'll end up with a better product, one that exceeds expectations by doing this. Next up would be learning about your audience and customers. So one of the first things that I do when I take on a project is in-depth research about your audience and customer base. This is things like interviews, surveys, digging deep into your data, stalking customer reviews and comments across the internet for your product or from your competitors. And I'm looking for language that tells me more about how the person felt when looking for your solution and what your product needs to do for them, what deep down motivated them to buy. And all of this develops the strategy that I use to speak to your audience. A huge pet peeve of mine are avatars that are created using demographics only. I don't really care that Taylor, say, is a college grad and makes $82,000 at their marketing job in New York. I think in femtech and sex tech space, we need to know more important things like, is this person educated about the problem your product solves? Or how many other solutions have they tried that failed them? Or what does your product need to do? And what is the language that we need to use to earn their trust? So those are just a few examples of sort of the deeper work that I think needs to be done first.
That's really helpful. And I love how you said about, you know, things as simple as how you design your avatar, that can really kind of set the tone for a product and potentially tell consumers whether it's going to be inclusive or exclusive for the solutions that they're looking for. I think it all comes down to kind of every single design feature has to be created in a way that is going to serve the target audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we were talking about a couple of moments ago, right, there's a lot of companies that don't use inclusive language or structures, but they're not really doing it, you know, from a purposeful or, you know, negative point of view, right? They're not trying to exclude certain populations. But as we've said, right, the products that they create can have that impact just depending on the assumptions that the company has put or gathered from the market research and the product design phases. So talk to us just a little bit more about the relationship that exists between assumptions and gendered outcomes.
Yeah, goodness. So, I mean, assumptions and gendered outcomes impact more than just products and can impact everything from city planning based on typical male travel patterns to architecture with things like glass staircases and being able to see up skirts. But the biggest thing for the femtech and sex tech space is simply that making assumptions about how your product will be used thinking about one specific audience is going to limit your ability to reach the people who could benefit from your product or would simply love it. It can limit the growth of your customer base and therefore your business too. Just bringing up one example here because it's so egregious, but dildos and vibrators, when I was growing up, were all pink and sparkly and veiny and shaped like some kind of animal or, my worst nightmare, an insect, because of assumptions made of what pleasure should look like. It had nothing to do with what the person who would actually be using the device wanted. And as a result, more assumptions were then made about sexuality and sexual desire that have affected this entire generation and further stigmatized sexual pleasure. And it's going to take years to walk back from that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I love what you just said, right? It takes years to walk back from this. So I think companies, right, might necessarily be thinking, okay, maybe my product isn't necessarily inclusive, but it's not harming anybody. You know, we're still getting our target demographic. But then whenever you look at it in the context of broader society and what that product is saying, it can be really harmful. And as you mentioned, right, take a long time to walk that back and get back to a starting place from which we can incorporate diversity and inclusivity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that egregious example because, right, we've seen companies in the femtech space do that and, you know, and have those kind of misaligned assumptions in their early design phases. So for instance, there has been, you know, a very prominent, I won't call it out by name, but, you know, period tracker and ovulation tracking app that in its initial phases made some assumptions that were exclusionary for populations. So for instance, right, if you were late for your period, you might see a happy cloud floating across the sky, right? And that really kind of assumed that everybody who was late on their period wanted to get pregnant, right? It didn't consider the fact that, you know, maybe you had a miscarriage in the past, right? And now that's impacting your cycle, or potentially, right, maybe you had been raped or there had been some other situation there where you didn't want to be pregnant. That was never factored into account. And then there was another one, right, that wanted users to input their sexual positions that they had used whenever trying to get pregnant. And the only options that you had were fruits that were, you know, a shape of a banana with or without a condom. And that was very exclusionary to the LGBTQ population.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know that we've touched on this a little bit in terms of the economic benefits for the company potentially, right, for incorporating inclusive language and prioritizing inclusivity. What are some of the other benefits that you have seen for companies that do prioritize inclusivity and some suggestions, right, for companies that want to start doing so? Kind of what is the case that they can make for doing this?
I mean, inclusivity in product design and the language around it creates better experiences and products for everyone. Great user experience quote that I love is that we should be designing for the margins because the rest of us will fill ourselves in. Just sort of a nod to, you know, the self-centered nature of, of human beings. But honestly, when you look at a well-done product page or homepage that uses inclusive language, you won't feel the absence of the word woman. There are plenty of femtech brands who are doing a great job with this, and their language feels personal, specific. It speaks directly to me as someone who identifies as a woman, and it does so without excluding anyone who doesn't. So an example for me there is Mosey Baby. I didn't write for them. I hope I get to someday, but could they market their product to women? Yeah, but they go straight for the end goal for anyone using their product, and that's having a baby, and it works beautifully. So the benefit to society here is, you know, obviously what we were talking about before, it's increasing awareness and sensitivity, but also ultimately improving healthcare outcomes for more of the population, reducing stigma and taboos, and improving reproductive health and sexual wellness for more people. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember too that, you know, at the end of the day, we're all looking for the same thing, right? We're all looking for improved healthcare or personalized health solutions. And so, you know, that's the end goal. And we should try to get there being as inclusive as possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So for companies that are looking to implement some of these strategies and that maybe want to start with something as simple as language, what are some alternatives that you see to some of the common gendered words that femtech companies could really start using now instead of the gendered language?
All right, let's start with the obvious one, the word woman. Rather than using that word, there are three things that you can focus on. So the first is anatomy. So saying people with vulvas or people who receive penetrative sex. The second one you can use is conditions. So people who lactate. And the third is leading with challenges or symptoms. So people experiencing frequent bladder leaks. And this really makes sure that you're calling out to anyone who can relate to your product, regardless of how they identify. It's super specific and done right. It immediately catches the attention of the people you're marketing to because of the fact that so much of reproductive health is taboo to talk about. I know personally, I would stop in my tracks if I saw a headline that said, a more comfortable solution for your prolapse. Or something like that. Some other easy ones are saying reproductive health instead of women's health, and then things like parent instead of mother. You're still going to reach your audience. You're just broadening your terms.
That's great. And as you mentioned earlier, right, it's not being exclusive to anyone who is a woman, but rather we're focusing on the end product, which is inclusivity. So I love those suggestions. Those are fantastic and very easy ways that can be implemented now to make the company more inclusive. Mm-hmm. So for a company that's got, you know, a website or a platform and is wondering whether or not that website or platform is inclusive enough, are there any questions or advice you can give them about how they should attempt to answer that or what they should look for when reviewing their website or platform from an inclusivity perspective?
Absolutely. There are a lot of things. The biggest question to me is to ask whether your products or experience are categorized by gender. So simply asking yourself, sitting down and saying, why did you make that decision there is going to be helpful. Now, I know that there are certainly supplements or medicines that work differently at a cellular level in the male and female body. And if that's the case, explaining why and what the effects are is so important so that people can choose the correct formula for their body. Another one is emojis and icons. So we touched upon this a little bit, you know, with apps. Ask yourself if your icons are gendered and why do they need to be? So the period app Clue did this a few years ago and switched their app icons from a person with a suit and tie on to represent protected sex and started using images of rain boots and one of flip-flops to represent protected and unprotected sex. It's so much better. It's clever and clear, and it is more inclusive, obviously. And then the last one that I'll talk about now is, you know, do you have diverse testimonials, case studies, or reviews on your website? Really, again, going back to that inclusive avatar, but also making sure that all different types of people can see themselves using your product and can see themselves represented on your page.
Very helpful. And what other resources exist out there for femtech companies that want to incorporate inclusivity into their products or their organizational structures? And I know that you had mentioned a guide that you had put together. So if you could kind of tell users as well about that resource and where they might access it.
So the very first thing I'm going to recommend to everyone is to reach out to a DEI coach or trainer. And I think for this space, you really want someone who can tailor their teaching to what your team needs and facilitate healthy discussion as you grow. So I have a small list of folks who can help with that. It's going to keep growing. And, you know, I do think that the femtech space is more on the progressive side. Potentially, you have people on your team, you know, who need that baseline training. I'm willing to guess that a lot of people are a little bit past that. So this is really more about finding the holes, making sure that you are doing your absolute best to create an inclusive business at your very core, and then really helping to facilitate sort of these more nuanced conversations around health and the body, since that's obviously, you know, the topic of femtech. And then, of course, I'm going to recommend that obviously, you download the Inclusive Language Guide. It is a great starting point to figure out what you need to work on rather than just swapping words. There are word swaps in it, as well as a style guide. But, you know, it really does take a step back and talk about sort of these 10 steps that I think are really important to do before you just start swapping out language. And you can go to my website, elizabethagordon.com, to download that.
And I have read the style guide, and I will say that it is very well done. It's very fun to read. The graphics and everything around it just make it such a pleasure. So if you haven't checked out that resource yet, highly recommend you do so. It's very user-friendly, and I think that you'll enjoy it. So Elizabeth, for companies, you know, do have inclusivity and inclusive language embedded into their corporate structure and their products, how do they then relay that to consumers, right? I mean, are there companies that do a good job of promoting this to consumers today? You know, how do you make that value add really recognizable out in public?
So I definitely recommend having a page or a blog post on your website that educates your audience on your values. Inclusive language is definitely becoming more mainstream, but we are not there yet. And so rather than feeling like you need to meet everyone where they are with your messaging in order to be successful, you can set yourself as a leader who teaches your audience about inclusivity and why it's important to you. Clue, again, does a great job of this, as well as the Midwives of North America. But I do really want to stress that before you can do that, you need to do the work to make sure your business is actually inclusive. You need to make sure that you've really created a business and a product with all people in mind, or it's just not going to ring true. But yeah, having that website or the web page up there or a blog where you are talking about this, the terms that you'll be using is going to really educate your audience along with you rather than, you know, feeling as though you can't use inclusive language because, say, you're speaking to an older or more conservative audience. Help them get there.
Such fantastic advice. Anything else that you wish the femtech community knew or, you know, should consider or take away from this podcast episode about inclusivity?
I think I would like to see the femtech space reach out to more gender neutral brands that already exist. And I'm thinking about, you know, I've seen a lot of change with, you know, like Thinks introducing that period boxer, you know, semi-recently. But there are a lot of brands that have been creating products for the trans community and for a gender neutral community that I think, you know, can really be brought into the conversation. And, you know, they might not get as much recognition, but I'd like to see some more collaboration between those two spaces.
I love that. Yeah, collaboration is absolutely key. And I think it's something that the femtech community does much better than other segments of the communities out there. We definitely have a ways to go, but I think that we're on the right path and truly appreciate you sharing all of these insights with us today. This is amazing work that has to continue. And I think the more that we can spread the knowledge and the resources for inclusivity, the faster we're going to grow.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. This was great. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope that you will listen to the next episode.
Thanks for listening to Legally Femtech with Bethany Corbin. To connect with Bethany, follow Femtech Lawyer on Twitter and Instagram, visit her website at femtechlawyer.com, and connect with her on LinkedIn. If you found value in this show, we'd really appreciate a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time.